That's a really interesting study, that IBED trial. And actually, we asked about that in the Patterns of Care study in terms of, A, what their thoughts were about the issue of continuing BEV when disease progression, particularly in a patient who's had a good response, which is there's a lot of that going on.
Right.
And that, B, it looks like, at least people are saying, now your information may say differently, that, quote, they like the IBED trial, they want to avoid all the problems we have with trastuzumab, and they want to participate.
But they're not putting patients on. And I do think there is an increasing bias towards the continuation of bevacizumab. You know, Axel Grothe, he did basically on his own accord. He and Dan Sargent asked for the BRIGHT data from Genentech. And this is a registry, so we have to throw up all the flags about that. But honestly, the survival curves for those patients who continued Bev into the second or third line, you can drive a truck between those curves.
Yep.
And it's a really striking positive finding. And of course, we're all soft-pedaling that to say, okay, that's rationale for why we need to accrue this clinical trial. But honestly, it may come out in the wash anyway, because there's only one arm of the three that doesn't get Bev in the IBET trial. And you better believe that those patients, when they progress, will get some Bev as the third line option. So it'll end up everybody will get Bev beyond progression, I'll bet you.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, in the past, we've done these think tanks, and we had one this summer right after ASCO, and you weren't able to attend. But whether we did think tanks or interviews or whatever, up until ASCO, we bring up the issue of continuing BEV, and the researchers are pretty hard line, at least what they said. We know in practice a lot of people were doing it even before ASCO, but when we had the think tank a couple weeks after ASCO, people really were taking a step back, and it looked, I mean, you tell me, are you doing it off study?
Yeah. So in a different sort of way, I tend to believe the BOND-2 data. And so I think there is some magic between putting an EGFR blocker and a VEGF blocker together. And we've seen it in clinic. If you ask Axel, he'll say the same thing, that we'll try that at one point down the road. Does that mean I just keep it? Do I Herceptinize it? No. But do I try it one more time before all is said and done? Yeah, in most patients. So actually, I think I'd like to add something to that, because I was fortunate enough to be at two separate think tanks, if you will, one that was really targeted for us old guys and one that was targeted for sort of the rising GI folks out there in the United States.
You're an old guy?
I'm an old guy now.
Okay.
So
it's bad.
Well, maybe I was in between. But so on one meeting where the old guys were there and Axel actually got up and presented the BRIGHT data, there was actually some, oh, that's cool. That's, you know, that's interesting. Yeah, that's my bias. And so there was a warmth around that data. But then we presented that data to the young guys and gals, and the ivory tower went up fast. And they said, how can you say that? That's not a trial. And they were quite purists. And so I wonder if we wear down with age. But it was quite, and these were a couple of weeks apart, these two.
That's interesting. You know, getting back to this survey we did of what you would do as a patient, you know, you wonder whether years and years of having people ask you that question and having to think it through, maybe that affects how you see decision making.
Yeah, it's got to. I mean, in my way of thinking, particularly when you're faced with a very hard question and a patient asks you that, I think really the only way I can quickly answer that is say, okay, in my own head, what would I do to me? And so I often use just that language. Okay, what would I do to me in this setting? And it makes for a lot of clarity.